This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show with me, Tisha Eek, on Health and Living on this Friday afternoon. It's our Doctor in the House segment. My co-host joining me on Zoom, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. Are you there, George? How are you?
I'm very good indeed. Happy Good Friday for those of you celebrating.
Absolutely. Happy Good Friday as well. Today we have an interesting topic, don't we, George? We're really moving away from COVID.
We're way past COVID now.
But something really, really relevant for many of our listeners out there, I'm sure. We're talking all about aesthetics today. Now, you know, walk down any row of shop lots, you can probably quite easily find some sort of a beauty center offering certain kinds of procedures, perhaps, or fixes for certain cosmetic purposes. But how many of us wonder about whether they are licensed to carry out these procedures? Now, with the Malaysian Society of Aesthetic Medicine stating that there are only actually about 300 doctors who are accredited under the Ministry of Health in the field of aesthetics, you know, we want to find out, why is it important to see an accredited aesthetic doctor? What are some safety issues that we should be thinking about? So joining us on the show today, Dr. Chin Shi Chun, President of the Malaysian Society of Aesthetic Medicine. How are you, Dr. Chin?
Hi, Shawe. Hi, Dr. George. Good to be on the show. Nice to see all of you here.
Absolutely. So do call us with your questions, 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. This is something so, so common, so popular in the minds of many people as well. So this is really your chance to find out, you know, if you've ever had any questions, doubts, want to share any experiences. Again, call 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Now, aesthetic medicine, what exactly is that, Dr. Chin? I think we need to just set that straight first.
Actually, there are no internationally accepted definitions for aesthetic medical practice. But for the purpose of guideline, as our Ministry of Health, it is defined as an area of medical practice which embraces multidisciplinary modalities dedicated to create a harmonious physical and psychological balance through either non-invasive, minimally invasive, or even invasive treatment modalities, which must be evidence-based. These modalities actually focus on the anatomy, the physiology of the skin, and also the more deeper underlying structures to modify the otherwise known as normal, or in other words, non-pathological appearance, in order to satisfy the goals of the patient. And by definition, these are carried out by registered medical practitioners.
George?
Wow, Dr. Chin, that was a bit of a mouthful of a detonation. Well, in summary, I guess it is just medicine of enhancing your beauty. Is that right?
Yes, correct. It's a medicine of enhancing your beauty, but beauty also encompasses the physical and also the psychological part of the patients. And by definition, this must be done by a medical practitioners. That's why it's differentiated from just an aesthetic procedure by itself.
So does that mean, George, let me just jump in. And I'm very curious. When you say it must be done by a medical doctor, does that mean it should only be in proper hospitals and clinics?
It must be in a registered medical health facilities. It could be either in a clinic or it could be in a medical center, but it must be properly credentialed and certified by the Ministry of Health to be a private healthcare facility.
George, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in essence, I mean, when I went to medical school, which is a long, long time ago, there were no such thing as aesthetic medicine. Is that a new branch of medicine? And also, how do you differ, obviously, from other branches of medicine that actually also enhance the beauty?
Okay. Traditionally, a lot of these procedures are done by plastic surgeons, okay? Plastic surgeons actually do a lot of this type of work. But more and more, this branch of medicine actually gone more or less invasive. So therefore, a lot of dermatologists and as well as general practitioners start to practice this. So in about 15 to 20 years ago, then we start to see a lot of doctors coming into this line to enhance the the appearance of a person, okay? And therefore, our Ministry of Health actually quite good of them to actually come up and sit together in the Ministry of Health and formulate and what we call as aesthetic medical practice. So there's a division in the medical practice division. So we have a committee there. So this encompasses the health ministry officials, the general practitioners like us, the dermatologists, as well as the plastic surgeons. So we sit down and we formulate and we come up with a guideline. So those are very important, is to have a guideline. And those doctors who are practicing aesthetic medicine, they actually need to go through a quite stringent process, and later we'll talk about it, to be actually called as an aesthetic medical practitioner.
Actually, so I think this might be a good point to explain a bit of that. What are these, the training that you go through? Because aesthetic medicine itself is not a specialty, right?
Yes, it's not known, it's not actually classified as a specialty, but it's a special interest. Okay, let me go through it like that. There are three chapters in the Ministry of Health, okay? So the credentialing are different. Chapter one is for the general practitioners, people like us. Let's say if you want to be an aesthetic medical practitioner, we go through a stringent process. Let me tell you the process. First, you have to be obviously a registered medical practitioner. You must finish your government service, which usually is as long as about 4 years, the fastest. Once you come out into private practice, so when you're in private practice, you can either be a general practitioner or you work under someone, work under a specialist, work under a dermatologist, or work under a clinic that is certified with LCP, for example. After 2 years, you fill out all your logbooks, okay? So the logbooks are quite specific for the different procedures. For example, botulinum toxin injection is one procedure, dermophilus another procedure, and the different types of cosmetic lasers, laser hair remover, laser for pigmentation, for tattoo remover, lasers for scar resurfacings, for example, all these, they are different. So you have to fill in all those logs and be certified by a trainer. People like us, we are trainers, so we certify them. Then only you apply all this to the Ministry of Health in the medical practice division. And once they are satisfied that you have satisfied all these criteria, you'll be called up to sit for an MCQ examination. So the MCQ examination usually is held either 2 or 3 times in a year. But in the past 2 years, they are lesser due to the pandemic. So once you go through the MCQ exam, if you pass it, the passing mark is not 50, it's a lot higher than, it's usually 60 to 75. And then once you pass it, you'll be called for an interview. And the interview is actually a more tougher part of the exams, okay? In the interview, you'll be actually interviewed also called VIWA by 4 doctors at least, a plastic surgeon, a dermatologist, a LCP holder like one of us, as well as the officer from the ministry, the medical practice division. So 3 or 4 of us will actually interview. And if you really go through it, we think that you are a safe practitioner, you know all the basics, and you are, one of the keyword here is safe. Even though you are a very smart doctor, you can pass everything, but if your attitude is wrong, and we can detect that, we can actually not let you go through the pass you. Once you pass, you get the LCP, then you can start your aesthetic medical practice.
LCP is?
It's Letter of Credential and Privileging.
Okay.
It's issued by our Ministry of Health and signed by the DG.
All right. George?
So in summary, how long does it take from the moment you have a DR in front of your name? And also who decides, you know, who gets to credential? Basically, you know, obviously you set up associations, and then since there is no specialty per se, then who decides who does all the assessment?
Is there a board?
Yes, there is a board. It's called a main committee of the aesthetic medical practice within the Ministry of Health under the medical practice division. So there is this committee, okay? The committee consists of quite about 20 or 20 over doctors, multi-modalities and multi-specialty, like I said just now. There are a lot of plastic surgeons, people from the university. So people from the UKM, from the University of Malaya, USM, those are professors and all that, as well as some of the head of departments of dermatology or HKL, for example. And they all sit on this committee. And these are the committee that decide, okay, on this credential. Mm-hmm. So like I said, the training is very long, Dr. George. First of all, you 4 years of government practice, and the key is another 2 years in private practice. That means you just can't come out of government, even though you can go through all the courses. A lot of government doctors, actually, they come through our courses, but they still can't go for the exam. Once they are out, they need at least 2 years, 2 years in private practice. Then only you are allowed to sit for the exam, the first part of the exam, you're called. And there's a waiting list, Dr. Josh, there's always a waiting list there. So once you get called, then you have to pass. But there's no limitation to the number of times you actually sit for the exam, but there's a limit to the number of times that the exam are being called. So once you pass that, you go through a VIVA, you pass a VIVA, then you're certified.
Yeah. Why must the training and the certification process be so rigorous?
So that you get the right doctors to practice. Because as we know, this is a new branch. It's a non-specialty, but yet it is a very specialized field. Not every doctor can actually start to inject all these botulinum toxin, dermal fillers and all that. Therefore, the training is quite long. You go through it. The logbook, for example, you need to fill in the logbook. So you have to have a certain number of procedures done under supervision. So I think one of the good things is our country is one of the first country, okay, to have this certification. Even in Singapore, you have some amount of certification, but not as vigorous as this. And I find that this is something good. So it creates a very good set of doctors. We are credentialed and we practice within our scope.
George?
Well, I mean, it's all good, nice and well that you set up all these stringent scrutiny, but I'm sure there are people who don't really know the fine line between whether this laser is applicable or not. And then they are practicing perhaps without those stringent qualification that you require. Is that illegal?
Yes, technically it is. And that's why we keep on come out to educate, not only the public, but as well as doctors themselves. But within the aesthetic fraternity, they do know that they have to go through for this LCP. It's a tough exam. So a lot of people, what they do is they actually park themselves under someone. For example, they will be trainees. They come to us, attach, or they do attach to some of other bigger chain group of doctors under dermatologists, for example, and they get the training. But like Josh, I think you bring up a very good point that a lot of people do still go and administer these procedures without having the LCP. And that, by right, shouldn't happen, actually. So ministry would always have the people to look out for this. So they have the people, they monitor the social media, for example. They always monitor the social media. For example, they look at certain clinics or certain practitioners advertising a lot of this treatment. They will actually go back and check on the list. Are they on or not? If they are not on, they actually, a lot of time, they will try to give a show cause letter. They tell them, okay, you shouldn't do this and this, you know, and to stop it, okay, and then go through your exams and things like that.
I think we read about this all the time in the media as well, but it also feels like, you know, for everyone that you can track down, 10 more pop up. So a lot of awareness on the part of clients seeking these services as well. George, hold on to your thoughts. We will go for a quick break first and come back. Follow up with EU, my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist for our Doctor in House segment today. We're joined by Dr. Chin Shi Chun, president of the Malaysia Society of Aesthetic Medicine. It's all about aesthetics on the show today. What exactly is this branch of medicine called aesthetic medicine, as Dr. Chin has described? But also we're going to look a lot more at sort of how lay people distinguish between what's illegal, what are the proper procedures, what's illegal, what's dodgy, what's potentially unsafe. So call us with your questions, 03-77-332-900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shawik, and my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. Today, we're speaking to Dr. Chin Shi Chun, president of the Malaysia Society of Aesthetic Medicine. Do call us with your questions regarding aesthetic or cosmetic procedures. You can call 03-77-332-900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We do have a question here on WhatsApp, which is really interesting. I'll get to it. George, you have a question first.
Well, shall we? We all know that the technology is so advanced these days. Every day we get new things coming up. in my opinion, there's a range of like lotion and potion, perhaps you apply on your skin, can be dangerous. And then also all these lasers and injectable, and lastly, the knife. So how do you decide that range, you know, who looks after what, and how do you keep up with all that medical advancement, and then so that you can accredit your members every time there's new technology coming up? Dr. Chin, can you take that answer?
Yes, that's why we actually divide them into three divisions, for example. So for the medical, the general practitioners, that we are only allowed to do non-invasive as well as minimally invasive. Whereas like the surgical part, for example, the surgical part, usually they are done by the surgeons, but not all the surgeons can do. Okay, coming back to the credential again. So the first part, which is the chapter one for the general practitioners, they basically can do botulinum toxins, dermal filler, cosmetic lasers, as well as chemical peel, and plus a little bit more on the energy-based device. For example, for the high intensity focused ultrasound, cryolipolysis, and the things of the like. Then the dermatologists, actually, they do a little bit more. They can, of course, treat dermatological conditions. And for the surgeons, for example, they're allowed to do like liposuction, for example, breast enhancement, breast reduction, tummy tuck, and the things of the like. Okay, but not all surgeons. For example, if you are a surgeon, for example, if you are a urologist, but if you want to do a nose job, then you need to be credentialed. Yeah. So the core are the plastics. So they are the ones who sit for with the interview to actually accredit the rest of the surgeons, let's say. So, okay, that's a very good question, Josh, when you ask about the medical advancement. So, for example, there are more and more machines that comes out, okay? Almost every other year, you get the new machines. And all this would actually be assessed by the medical device authority, whether these devices are allowed to be used by us or not. And of course, there's a committee to look at it. We give our suggestions, we sit down. And of course, in the end, if it's accredited and if it's approved, then we are allowed to use it. But by and large, we have a certain amount of, for example, laser machines or energy-based devices, which we are allowed to use. It's a very good question. Things happen so fast, we have to be kept abreast with all these developments.
So we have a question here on WhatsApp from a plastic surgeon himself, and he's touching on the point that you made about the different tiers. I'm using my own words here, you know, GPs do the non-surgical, non-invasive procedures and so on. The surgeon is asking, what is being done about all the aesthetic clinics out there that have foreign surgeons performing cosmetic surgeries, as well as also GPs who are LCP holders, but they perform cosmetic, they perform surgical procedures such as rhinoplasty or eyelid surgeries. The surgeon has had cases of these botched surgeries that were done in GP clinics. So he's asking, why are these practices not regulated?
These are actually regulated. It's just, it needs to be reported. There are two parts. For example, you talk about the foreign doctors who come in here. First of all, are they registered to practice here? Do they have a temporary APC to do the procedure here? Are they having an LCP, for example, to do here? Obviously, a lot of these doctors that fly by night, they just come in, they are not really accredited to do it. So next is the enforcement. We have to report all this to the authorities. There is an email that we can actually send in. It's called AMP. AMP stands for Aesthetic Medical Practice, AMP at moh.gov.mine. So this is the email that the public or even the practitioners can actually use. So whenever you make a report, you must be substantiated with evidence. You must have some photographs or some sort of evidence for them to start to initial and investigate.
So what about the GPs? They are LCP holders, but they're doing a level of procedures they are not actually certified to do.
So this is the second part of the question. I think there's a two-part. One is all these foreign doctors. The other one is the general practitioners who are not, for example, their apprenticeship, do certain things, but not like, for example, eyelid surgery. So these are actually wrong. So if you have any evidence of this, you can actually, same channel, you actually get the information, get the evidence, the more important, and actually channel it up to the authorities, to the aesthetic medical practice.
All right. The surgeon has one more part to his question. Chapter 1, aesthetic LCP holders loaning their LCP licenses to beauty centres. He claims that this is very rampant. Is anything being done to curb this?
I'm not very sure about this. This is not supposed to be. So if you list down your LCP in, for example, 2 or 3 clinics, by right, you have to be present there.
So you, as a license holder, you can practice at several clinics, for instance.
All doctors have a right to practice in a few places, but it has to be logical. You can't have your license, one in Penang, one in Ipoh, and one in Johor, and you say you practice in 3 places on the same day. So it's not logical. But let's say you actually practice like in, you know, nearby 2 clinics, you are supervising. But anything that happens in the clinics under your responsibility.
This problem that he's pointing out is not just even a license holder practicing in different clinics. This is, unethically letting another facility use your license.
So if this is done, then actually it should be reported. Yeah, I agree with this doctor that if there is such thing with evidence, you can actually report them. And the ministry will actually take action, investigate, and actually do something about it.
George?
Dr. Chin, why is the license given to the centre and not given to the individual professional? Because, you know, if you have a license, let's say, for example, I'm licensed to be a urologist, I can't just be licensed for my centre to be a urologist and get it subcontracted to other people. The license is for me. So is that the case that at the moment the license is given to centre rather than to individuals?
No, George, it's to the individual. That means the license go with me, not to my clinic. So, but if I'm in the clinic, then that center can actually do aesthetic practice. Let's say if I practice in 2 places, like me, I do my 2 clinics as well as in a medical center in Malacca. So 3 places I can go.
So
it's not to the center, George, it's to the person, to the doctor.
All right, okay. Because I probably misunderstood that earlier on that, the caller actually highlighted that certain time license were being kind of subcontracted to beauticians. That's not the case. You're categorically, clarifying that. Is that correct?
It's true, George. You can't do that. Definitely not in... It has to be in a, what they call... a clinic or a hospital, it cannot be in a medical center, definitely not.
Yeah, Shelley, I'm also quite keen to find out, right? Earlier on, you highlighted that there's lots of channels for you to report. I mean, as an association, can you tell the listeners out there how many cases have you actually attended to in the last 24 months, for example, and then exactly how many people get, held accountable if they actually break the law?
Dr. Chin?
Sorry, the question was for me. Can you tell me again?
That's right. Dr. Chin, you early on highlighted that, there are channels for general public, for doctors to report any malpractices. For example, if you don't hold the necessary training and then you're practicing. And then so you highlighted all these channels. So as an association, surely you keep a record of how many people were actually investigated and how many people actually were held accountable for their, breaking the law?
Offhand, Josh, I do not have the exact numbers from year to year, but we do have those, the reports or complaints. And usually we will channel it to the authorities. That means the Ministry of Health. So from there, they investigate. If there's any action, they actually sometimes give a warning letter or they even go to the extent of taking away the license. For example, the LCP, from the particular practitioners or even bring the matter up to the Malaysian Medical Council.
Do you think
a rough idea what numbers?
I can't offhand give you the numbers. Yeah.
But do you think enough is being done? Because already we have a surgeon who's clearly very concerned and is seeing firsthand, botched cases coming. We read about it in the news. We see the mushrooming of these beauty centres as well. We've probably heard firsthand accounts from people among our circle who have perhaps, been unfortunate enough to have gone through dodgy procedures, right? So, number one, enforcement is the second part of the regulations that exist. But do you think also why do people take the risk of going to unlicensed centres? Or perhaps is it just very, very unclear in people's minds that some procedures really should only be done by credentialed practitioners? Is it because it's aesthetic, therefore people think there should be no distinction?
I think you are right in a certain way. There's a rampant of all these advertisements and all that. So a lot of people actually go and do aesthetic medical practice, but they don't know, they cannot differentiate between whether it's medical or non-medical, for example. For example, like eyelid surgery. Eyelid surgery obviously is a surgical procedure, but a lot of non-practitioners, even beauticians, they do a lot by experience probably, with, you know, some foreign doctors, they do it. And more so all this, so-called this public, then they are like attracted and they actually believe in them and then they go through it. That's when all these botched cases happen. For example, like if you are a public, you are a person there, obviously you don't go to a hotel to do a procedure, for example. Recently in Perak, there's a case where a person had actually died because of procedure done in a hotel. But as me and you, we know there's no reason for us to go to a hotel or, for example, a house call to do some injection and things like that. So that I think this, some of our people, you know, are a little bit gullible to all this, maybe through pressure, peer pressure, as well as I think social media and things like that. And that's happening not only in Malaysia, but I think elsewhere as well.
That's the thing, right? Social media is thriving with these kinds of either influencers posting it or their ads. And if the public can only report by sending an email, I see a bit of a disconnect that, you know, perhaps the authorities just aren't able to keep up with how vast and how viral the kind of marketing these beauty centres do.
I agree with you. So probably this is something that we need to do. Like today itself is a good, you know, it's a platform for us to actually educate the public about what is medical and what is not medical, what is, you know, and the different divisions among it, whether it's surgical, non-surgical, and things like that. This is good. And even in the ministry itself, I think they are also, because I sit in the committee, so we get a chance to actually bring up some of these issues and it's been looked into. But again, like Shelly, a lot of times it's the jurisdiction, I would like to bring a new term here, jurisdiction. The Ministry of Health can actually regulate those who are under medical, for example, medical practitioners, nurses, and MAs and all that. A lot of times it's done in a beauty centers, for example. A beauty center doesn't come under medical anymore.
So that's where the loophole is.
The loophole is. So if, say, I open up something called a beauty center or pusat kecantikan, so I'm definitely not under the MOH jurisdiction. So therefore comes the problem. I'm opening a business that's not related to MOH. So you can't actually step in.
So there's...
So what happened recently is the Ministry of Health actually worked with other agencies, for example, Ministry of Domestic Trade and Consumer. So they work with immigration, with the police and all that. Actually, there's a raid done where there's foreigners who come in and actually do all these illegal procedures. And that's very good. And that's what we are doing. Even in the Ministry of Health, they actually like try to work with the local authorities, you know, the Kerajaan Tempatan, the local authorities, the immigration, as well as the human resource and all that, coming into to try to plug this loophole.
Mm-mm.
But there's still a lot to be done, I agree with you.
A lot more. George?
Well, at this point, perhaps, Dr. Chin, can you explain to the listeners out there what can the beauticians do and what can the beauticians not do?
Okay, that's a very good question. As you know, beauticians, they are not medically trained. So they should not do anything that's invasive. So you and I, we know, for example, as a lay people, if you try to stick a needle into someone and inject a poisonous substance, poisonous or medicine, for example, obviously that is to be done by a doctor, right? Don't talk about cutting or stitching and all that. Obviously, these are not. There's another misconception. A lot of times, people, when they do machines, for example, we have a lot of machines in use for cosmetic purpose. For example, we do laser surgery or laser treatments. We do something called high-intensive focused ultrasound. It may look simple and non-invasive, but it can penetrate you and I. We know it. all these laser machines can go beyond the skin and deeper tissue. And the ultrasound can even actually go up to the smart layer or even the fat layer. And therein lies a lot of blood vessels, the nerves, and the underlying tissues. So, and all these machines can go deeper, even though you don't cut the skin, but this ray of lights or ray of lasers can actually go deeper. And this is invasive. I have to emphasize to the listeners out there, these treatments are invasive.
Lasers and ultrasound.
Lasers and ultrasound. If the person who handles it doesn't know about the complications, then you are in trouble. This is not as simple. I've seen throughout the years of my practice, there are burns, there are injury to underlying things, you know, as well as a lot of other complications.
So this is a problem, isn't it? Because the only definition that will clarifies what is doable and not doable by beautician is just the invasiveness. I mean, lotion and potion can be quite invasive. If it's corrosive to a face, it can be invasive. Laser can make someone blind. And then, you know, all these are supposed to be non-invasive, but technically they are very invasive. So, I mean, we all walk down the malls and then we see beauticians doing all that. And what exactly have you done as a society, as an organization to enforce this or in order to put pressure on the government to clamp this down?
Josh, as a society, we can't do the enforcement, but we can bring all this matter up, sit on the table and bring all this up to them. And as you rightly pointed out, it is not an easy task, actually. So first of all, we have to classify things, invasive or non-invasive. Is it a medical procedure or non-medical procedure? If it's a medical procedure, it has to be done by certain doctors. If it's non-medical, then it's opened up. For example, medical spas, the facials and things like that. But beyond that, so then now we come down to the point of, like, for example, the medical devices authority. So this is a good act that's coming in very well. So we are really hoping that this goes through very well. And that's where the enforcement can come in. They can actually come in and say, is this a medical device? If this is a medical device, it shouldn't be operated by you.
So we have a good question here from a listener who's asking about the sales of either the injectables or the machines, like laser machines, right? Is it regulated as to who is allowed to buy and operate them?
Yes. With the Act coming in, then the medical devices are regulated.
Coming in meaning it's not vendors, meaning it's not enforced yet.
It is. There is an act and all that, but enforcement, there would still a bit of things to be done in the law part of it, okay? The ministry has got quite a lot of lawyers to work for them and all that. Eventually, if it's passed, we also hope that the lawmakers are here to help us push this very fast. That means the Medical Devices Act is one of the big so-called, a way that we can actually control a bit of these things, yeah.
All right. We have another question, which I'll get to after the break. A bit of a cliffhanger here. It's a great one as well. But keep those questions coming in. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also call us 03-7733-2900. Dr. Chin Shi Chun, President of the Malaysia Society of Aesthetic Medicine, joining both myself and Dr. George Lee on our Doctor in House show today. It's all about aesthetic medicine. So get those questions in. We'll be right back after this break. BFM 89. Welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao. It's Doctor in the House today with my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. We're discussing aesthetic medicine with Dr. Chin Shi Chun, president of the Malaysian Society of Aesthetic Medicine. The questions are coming in fast and furious, so do keep them coming in. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or call us 03-7733-2900. Going to jump right into one of them. Now, Dr. Chin, what about tattooing eyebrows? Is that invasive?
Tattooing is out of us, okay? Tattooing is done by non-doctors, obviously, but removal of tattoos are done by us. So tattooing anywhere, whether it's eyebrow or on your skin or anywhere, it's actually non-medical procedure. So it's out of our so-called jurisdiction.
Okay. I have one of my own. I've been seeing social media advertisements for drips offered by some so-called beauty services. Detox drip, whitening drip, fat burning drip. The list goes on. What about these?
So all these drips, it depends. The main issue here is whether these substances are registered products or not. So if these substances are registered products, there are some vitamins which are used in hospitals. For example, we have some B-complex injections. And for the sick, especially when they are moribund and they are in the ICU, they do have some vitamin D for them. And these are actually quite widely available. If you are using these vitamin drips and all, it should be okay. The key here is whether it's a registered product. There are also instances where we actually see people using non-registered products. If it's a non-registered product, then I think it's wrong.
All
and
right.
Again, there comes all these advertisement and claims on whitening and this and that. So again, the issue of misleading.
But even if it's a registered product, let's say you give the example of some vitamin drips, these should only be done under supervision of healthcare professionals, right?
Yes, obviously.
Mm. George, before I get to your question, just one more from a listener about stem cell anti-aging products offered by beauty salons. Your thoughts, are these legal or not?
Great question.
It's a very good question. Actually, it's a very wide thing. So it's quite a huge topic about regenerative medicine. As you know, regenerative medicine actually encompasses like stem cells. Stem cells, there are so many types of stem cells, whether it's mesenchymal stem cells, it's adult or adult stem cells and all those things. Then there's exosomes, secretomes, and the like. There's so many types. A lot of times, but for example, in a beauty salon at all, a lot of things are used just topical, for example. And I'm sure you've heard of something like apple stem cells and I don't know, sheep placenta and a lot of the likes. So these are quite misleading. This could be called stem cell, but it's actually not really stem cell because it doesn't do anything. So that's all right. But when they start to inject, for example, MSC, mesenchymal stem cells, then that's wrong. A mesenchymal stem cell is considered invasive. You know, it's being done in the hospitals. Of course, there are still a lot of studies, a lot of way to go before it become very mainstream. So a lot of times we all look into overseas, for example, in Europe, in Japan and all. So and so have done this and all. And therefore, there is, there's a demand for it. But if it's done properly, if your product is registered, okay, you know what you are doing, it's for the right indication, and then that's all right. But when it start to go beyond that, then I think it's a whole can of worms.
George?
Well, Dr. Chin, I mean, I'm not, shall we ask her own questions about the drip more? I'm going to ask my own question. Well, I'm always tempted about all these perhaps non-invasiveness in air quotes of, let's say, cool sculpturing. Let's say if there's no botched job, but as a result of the procedure is not meeting my expectation. So, for example, you promise certain things and then that's not delivered. And that's completely done by a licensed person. Is there a recourse for this? And then also, are you on indemnities to pay for compensations if there's any recourse?
You're always giving me a tough question, Dr. Okay, for example, like all this non-invasive, like cryolipolysis, is widely done. So obviously, there is a range. Some people respond very well to it. The fat is being reduced because of apoptosis and the like. But some people actually respond a bit less. Daring comes during the consult. So you shouldn't actually overpromise. You must always tell the right example. Only certain percentage of people actually respond to it. Some people respond very well. Some people just a little. Some people do even have sometimes relapse and a paradoxical increase in fat cells, for example. It happens. There are cases reported. Even though it's very few, there are paradoxical increase in fat cells after the procedure. So then you can actually bring up these cases to the practitioner. So whether you have promised, that's why we say we should always under-promise and over-deliver. Because you see, in aesthetic medicine, patient comes in, they are well, they are not sick and all. So your consultation must be proper. It must be really, a lot of times it's about managing expectations.
So what's the recourse though, and the indemnity?
You can, if there is a lot of times, the recourse is, let's say, legal recourse. Usually, there must be some injury. As far as I know, if there's some injury done, then you can actually try to institute legal actions against practitioners. But if there's no result, usually you can't do much about it because there's no injury.
Is it mandatory for aesthetic doctors to take up protection insurance so that you will protect your clients?
Yes, we do. We do. We have special insurance for aesthetic medical practice. Not all the insurers provide that, but there are quite a few more and more nowadays. It's not as expensive as the gynae's indemnity, but it's pretty much, but it's more than a general practitioner's premium.
You know, George, sorry, I want to jump in because I'm just looking, you know, the listener who was asking about the tattooing of the eyebrows is still confused, you know, like because that does involve, well, some invasion of the skin, you know, with any tattooing procedure as well, you know, there's potential for infections and all that. But more generally, how do we expect the general public to really be able to distinguish what should be done by a beautician or which LCP level holder should do this and that? It's too much, I feel, for the general public to put the onus on them to find out. You know, you could say we must find out whether the product is registered, whether the practitioner is registered, but how do they even go about that, Dr. Chin?
So I think there's no easy answer to that, but I want to make it very general and very logical, okay? So if you think it's invasive, then it's more likely that it has to be done by a medical practitioner. If it's less invasive, then you may do it. Okay, like, for example, you brought up the subject of a brow tattoo. And not brow tattoo, eyelid tattoo, for example.
Oh, well, this particular one was actually brow tattoo.
Brow is not so bad, actually. Brow is a lot far away from the eye. So if it's just a brow tattoo, it's usually done by the tattooist, for example. The people who are professional, they do the tattoo. And then by the removal of this tattoo, it's done by laser machines. Now we use the Q-switch and yet laser machines to actually remove these tattoos, the brow tattoo. Then those are done by medical practitioners.
So yeah, but also, again, right? It's like, okay, I have to know this is the person I go to for tattooing, but this is another person I go to for removal. What more can we do to help people know where can I go to find out? You know, who can I report to? What recourse can I take?
Actually, there is a website where all the registered medical practitioners are. It's very easy. You just have to Google it because the website is quite complicated. The link is quite complicated. You just Google registered medical practitioners in Malaysia. So that then you come up with the Ministry of Health and you get all the lists. All the three chapters lists are there so you can check. So if you are a person, you walk in, you're not so sure whether this place is registered or not, there are three certificates you have to look out for. One is what I call as the Borang B. Borang B is the private Healthcare Facilities Act. So this is, if you have the Borang B, that means you're actually a medical practice, okay? Second thing is the APC. I think all of us know that, the Annual Practicing Certificate of a Doctor. So at least the second step, you know that you are the doctor. The third step is, like I said, the LCP just now. They should have all these three certificates before they're allowed to do aesthetic medical practice.
Okay, so here's another question to challenge you. Another listener asking, if you go to a dermatologist for laser treatment, but the procedure is done by the dermatologist assistants instead, is this okay?
This is okay because the dermatologist is responsible for the therapies. It's a trained therapist, for example. So there are certain procedures that can be done by a therapist or even a laser technician, for example. So the person responsible is still the dermatologist. For example, if I'm the dermatologist, and I do this treatment, so I should know who can do and who cannot do. And if there's a complication, I should be able to handle it. You see, shall it? A lot of times, to do a procedure is not that difficult, okay? But to treat the complications is the key. Do you know what are the complications? And do you know how to identify it? And do you know how to treat it when it happens? Okay, so these are the things. For example, okay, if we go to other types of treatment, for example, the botulinum toxin or even a dermal fillers, these are some of the procedures that are also done by non-practitioners or non-certified practitioners. And this actually has got even more grave complications. For example, in the dermal fillers, you can actually lead to blindness. vascular complication. You inadvertently, if you inject into the vascular compartment, you can actually lead to blindness and so on and so forth. So these are actually very invasive. But if it's being, for example, supervised by a doctor, then the doctor is responsible. In the end, the doctor is responsible for what happens in his practice.
George?
Dr. Chin, I mean, we're running out of time, but I'm just quite keen for you to answer this. I mean, from the sound of the last 45 minutes, we highlighted that this whole thing, it's almost like a Wild West. You know, it's like there are beauticians in it, there are dermatologists, there are plastic surgeons. And you guys, from the sound of it, is that only enhancing that training? You set the rules about how, who qualifies for what, but the enforcement itself, really, it's kind of lacking. As the president of Malaysia Society of Aesthetic Medicine, where do you see your role for the next 5 years, for example, to consolidate the whole market?
I think, Josh, one of the most important things is at least there are rules now. So at least when there are rules, then it's up to enforcement. And every time when they want to do enforcement, they need to have evidence. And unfortunately, a lot of times that is lacking. If they have solid evidence, they can actually go in and prosecute so-called the wrongdoers. Okay, so those are the things. As a society, then what we do is we have to educate the public, and which we are doing today. By the number of questions that come in, we know that this is a hot topic. Maybe it may take more time to actually explain a lot. So we have to keep doing it. And even though it's not easy, we have to keep doing, whether it's social media, whether it's the mainstream media, and keep educating. And I do see that more and more nowadays, the clients or the patients, they are more educated. They know where to go and they know what to do, and more or less, even though it seems not like it, because every time there's a botched case, it got reported and it looks like there's a lot of botched cases. But at the same time, there are a lot of cases that are done safely, done in the right place by the right people, and they got good outcomes.
If I could ask you to leave us with sort of maybe a checklist of what the public should ask or look out for when they're considering aesthetic treatments, Dr. Chin.
I think I mentioned just now those three borangs. You have a borang B, that means it's a private healthcare facilities. So second thing is the doctor have the ATC, then it's actually a certified doctor. And lastly is the LCP holder, like 2 years now, letter of credential and privileging. All these things should be there. So if you walk into a place, you're not sure, as a consumer, you have the right to ask. For example, like nowadays, you see a lot of people with PhD from a lot of universities and all that, which are not medical. So they put doctor so-and-so, and they start to give aesthetic medical procedures. They do that, you know. And if you are not sure, you should ask, are you a medical doctor? Are you certified to do this? You know, and you know, things like that. So as a consumer, we have a right and we must ask. We shouldn't just like passively just let somebody actually do all these procedures on us.
George, any final thoughts?
Tough questions, and listeners out there really do ask tough questions. I really think this branch of medicine really require tough questions.
Absolutely. Just to reiterate that email address to report any illegal procedures, any wrongdoing that you've encountered is amp@moh.gov.my. As Dr. Chin said, you know, it's only by reporting that these dodgy services can be tracked down and then can be held accountable. Thank you so much for speaking to me today. My co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, Dr. Chin Shi Chun, president of the Malaysia Society of Aesthetic Medicine. You've been listening to Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.